You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Monster Monday presented, of course, by DraftKings Sportsbook. Love those dudes. Make sure you use the code Ross if you're betting on the draft at all. And if you are, you got to check out the Even Money Betting Podcast tomorrow. Always fun to throw in some prop bets on the NFL draft. We will, of course, be talking about the draft on the College Draft Podcast with Emery Hunt today. Make sure you listen to that or watch it, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL. We've got the man, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, the author of The Beast, on the show today. We're going to have Greg Cosell, by the way, on Wednesday this week, because I want to get Greg's thoughts on the D linemen enough in advance of the draft to be able to digest it. And then our third episode this week, it'll be Friday morning with me going over all my thoughts from round one of the NFL draft. It is draft week, baby. Get fired up. Very excited, by the way, to talk to Brett Whitefield again on Wednesday's Fantasy Feast podcast with Joe Dolan. He had some really interesting stuff last week talking quarterbacks and running backs. We'll get into the tight ends and wide receivers this week. It's a huge week as part of the RT Media Podcast Network. And by the way, speaking of that, it's been a while. Our guy David Merlino reminded me we haven't had a virtual happy hour in a long time. I think it's been like a year. You guys deserve it. We're doing it. Patreon.com/RTMedia. Mark your calendars. 8 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. Anybody that shows up gets to ask me a question, whether it's about me or you or your team. It doesn't matter. Just make sure you're a Tuckheads patron, because we post the Zoom link on the private Slack channel, the Tuckhead Slack channel, patreon.com/RTMedia. Cannot wait to talk with some of you guys, see what you're drinking, if anything. It's okay if you're not, and get to know hopefully a few more of you. patreon.com/RTMedia. Might even be able to get to some winners a little bit later in the show, last week's winners. But right now, it's big show time.
The big show.
Well, as promised, we are kicking off draft week 2024 with a bang with my guy, Dane Brugler from The Athletic. You know how fond I am of Greg Cosell on Thursdays. You know how I feel about Emery Hunt and the work that he puts in. Dane is considered by a lot of folks around the NFL to be the closest thing we have. When you see his scouting reports, it's unbelievable the breadth and depth of knowledge he has on these prospects. I like just talking to Dane about what high schools these guys went to and the other sports they played, because I think it's interesting. I found out that Jared Verse is from like an hour away. I had no idea. I never even heard of him in high school. He went to a terrible, terrible high school at football right next to maybe the best school in the state. Southern Columbia has won like 7 state championships. It's where Julian Fleming went. He went to the next, like, it's a miracle, Dane, that he didn't somehow go to Southern Columbia. Like, I don't know how that happened, but he went to Central Columbia, who wins, like, maybe one game a year. It's nuts. But that's the kind of information that you know, and you have the background on these guys.
Yeah, well, and he was a tight end in high school. I mean, he was undersized. He was 200 pounds in high school. And so to see where he was then to where he is now, I mean, he grew up in Dayton. He grew up in North Carolina for a little bit before he did. He was in Pennsylvania for high school. But that's my favorite part of this whole process, is learning about the journey for all these guys, because no two are alike. Everyone has their unique path to get to this point. And it's so interesting to learn, okay, J.J. McCarthy was a big-time hockey player. Okay, that's interesting. That's where he developed his toughness from. To learn how some of these guys, you know, Terry Arnold was a thought he was going to be in the NBA. It wasn't until deeper in the high school that he realized, okay, all these offers are coming for football. I need to switch over and make sure I'm focused on football because that's where my future is. A lot of fun journeys, a lot of fun stories. And, you know, I care about the analysis, obviously, the scouting reports and the pro day testing. You know, no other resource has pro day testing, NFL verified pro day testing for almost 2,000 players than the Beast Draft Guide. But the journeys, to me, that's the most fun that I have over, you know, the last 18 months of putting this together.
So he mentioned the Beast. Highly encourage you, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, to do so. It is fantastic. I mean, fantastic content that Dane brings you. That, I mean, honestly, just that is worth the subscription alone to The Athletic. It's funny, Dane, I'm with you. It's my favorite thing of calling games is talking with the players and also doing background on them. Like, I couldn't understand 2 years in a row I was doing Western Michigan games, and Braden Fisk was awesome. And yeah. I remember asking, like, the one D coordinator, I'm like, how did you guys get him? And you probably already know this, Dane, but in high school, he only played offensive guard.
Yep.
And, like, he came to their camp summer before his senior year, and his coach was like, hey, just give him a hard look. Like, he might play defense for us this year. Like, by the way, that high school coach should be fired. How is Braden Fisk only playing offensive guard as a junior in high school? But that's an athletic guard there. But those are the type of stories, I'm with you, Dane, that are just so cool. And honestly, it helps you understand the player, right? Like, so for me, Princeton, well, junior high school, I was 6'3", 210. You know, I was very skinny. So I remember when I talked to Marty Schottenheimer, he was like, yeah, you know, you always wonder why a guy. I said, well, I was 210 pounds my junior high school and then got up to 240 as a senior, but that's not enough to get power. He's like, well, then that's the answer. That's why, you know, you went to Princeton and not the other places. But it just helps you understand where the guy came from and why he is where he is.
It's exactly right. In order to know where these guys are headed and the type of player they are, understanding the context of where they, what their journey was to this point is such a big part of that. And yeah, and Fisk, he's a great example. I remember him telling me that his high school coach didn't believe in the two-way player. So they needed him on the offensive line, and he was good. He was an all-conference offensive lineman in high school. Because he didn't play a ton of defensive line, he wasn't highly recruited. He had two offers, Illinois State, and then Western Michigan came in. And yeah, you think about thinking outside the box with Western Michigan, give them credit because they developed him on the defensive line. And then, of course, he transfers to Florida State for his sixth and final year and was outstanding. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl, crushes it. Combine, one of the most best athletic freaks that we had at this year's combine. And so it's no mystery why he's going to be drafted probably somewhere in the first two rounds here in a week.
So Dane, every draft is different. Every draft is unique. I think I know how you're going to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is going to be unique or different about this draft? What is just totally different than we've seen recently or in other drafts about 2024?
Well, we've never seen 20 offensive players drafted in the first round. This year, there's a good chance we hit that number. In my 7-round mock that just came up out this week on The Athletic, I had 21 offensive players in there, 11 defense, and it starts at the top with these quarterbacks. We also might see the first time we've ever seen quarterbacks go 1-2-3-4. That's never happened before. And 1-2-3 has only happened a few times. But there's a chance we could get that fourth one if the Cardinals trade out and fourth quarterback, whether it's J.J. McCarthy or whoever does not go 2 or 3, ends up being that fourth pick. And then where's the first defensive player come off the board? We've never seen the first 8 picks be all offense before. 57 years in the Super Bowl era, we've had 57 drafts, never seen offense go 1 through 8. We might see it this year. It just depends. I think we'll see 1 through 7, and then it depends what the Falcons do at 8, if they trade out of that spot or if they take the first defensive player there. So this is going to be an offensive-heavy first round, starting with the quarterbacks and then wide receivers, offensive tackles, other positions mixed in, But we talk about the premium positions. Those guys, those positions, that's going to make up the bulk of that first round.
So I'm curious about your thoughts when you mentioned, you said premium positions.
Yeah.
And this is something I find really interesting. I have an article that came out last week from the 33rd team about that concept of positional value. And basically just wondering, Dane, if more teams will look at what the Lions did last year and not put as much of an emphasis on positional value or, you know, premium positions. You know, they took a running back at 12, a linebacker at 18, a tight end at 34, and a safety nickel, whatever you want to call them, at 45. They were all good. I mean, they're all good football players. I guess I'm curious. I know you talk to like every team and you have your own opinions. How much stock do you put in positional value? And I guess in particular, how that relates to Brock Bowers this year.
Yeah, that is the exact name I was going to bring up, because I even stopped. I'm not using that term anymore, positional value. I've kind of replaced it with impact value. Because everything, the Lions are a great example. You look at Jahmyr Gibbs, and you know nobody had the Lions drafting Jahmyr Gibbs in the top 15. They do it, and in hindsight, after seeing him on the field in that role, it's like, well, duh, yeah, that's obviously that was the right pick. That was the right thing to do. And I think that you don't worry about the positional value. You worry about impact value, and that's going to be different from team to team. You know, for one team, it's going to mean one thing. Another, it's going to mean something different. And so Brock Bowers is a perfect example where people see the T and the E next to his name and they get a little freaked out. And, you know, you can't draft a tight end that early. Look at the track record. I get it. But when you look at Brock Bowers, he's not just someone you're going to plug in as a Y, line him up in line and then set it and forget it and run your offense. You're drafting Brock Bowers to be a featured part of your offense, whether it's in line, whether it's in the slot, out wide, in the backfield. Make defenses account for him on every single play, his athleticism, his toughness, the compete level that he has. And usually tight end's a position that takes a little bit. It takes a little while to adjust to the NFL game. But with Brock Bowers, I mean, just let's look at his true freshman year, his first year in college, and you look at the weapons on that Georgia squad from, you know, Pickens and Jermaine Burton and Adonai Mitchell and all these guys, but yet it was the tight end, true freshman, who led the team in receiving, helped that team get to win a national championship. So I'm not worried about Brock Bowers being able to acclimate himself pretty quickly to the NFL game. The biggest thing is just, does my play caller understand how to use a weapon like this? If I'm a general manager, I'm sold on the talent. It's just, we go back to that impact potential. Do I trust my play caller to have a plan in place to make sure we're utilizing him up to the level of what he's capable of? If I'm convinced of that, then I would have no problem drafting him somewhere in the top 15. And I think that's what we're going to see, whether it's the Jets at 10, Broncos at 12, Colts at 15, or maybe a surprise team in there. Someone's going to see the value, maybe the positional value, but the impact value of Brock Bowers, and they're going to pull the trigger, and I'm going to bet that they're not going to regret making that decision.
They're not, Dane. Just like I never regret any time I'm drinking Labatt Blue Light with friends, family, or maybe even by myself during the draft this weekend. Always enjoy it responsibly. It's delicious beer made by Labatt USA in Buffalo, New York. All right, so Dane, you know what's funny about the Brock Bowers thing, by the way? I think I would love to see where he'd be ranked in your receivers as a slot receiver. Like, he is athletic enough that, you know, if you want to just call him a big slot, you know, Marcus Colston, right? You know, you can call him a receiver if you want to. I'm sure he'd be happy to get down to 230 and play receiver if that's what you want him to do. And I think he'd be a darn good slot receiver.
He has the speed for it. And some people will be scared off that we don't have testing for him. Wasn't able to test at the combine, wasn't able to test at the pro day, right hamstring injury. But you don't need the testing to understand how high of a level of an athlete this guy is. Just watching him on film, and he's running by defenders in the SEC without any trouble. But he's also a guy that has the toughness factor too, because you know, for a lot of players, it's a 6-yard gain. But for him, he turns it into an 8-9 yard gain because he's got that toughness as a finisher. So I agree. That TE next to his name scares some people off. But if we call him a slot receiver, we call him a dynamic weapon, whatever, however we want to classify what he is, it's a little bit different than what I think most people think of when they think of tight end. So, no, I think that's a great point.
I asked this of Jim Nagy last week, I think. You know, we focus so much on the first round, and I get that. But, you know, there's other rounds, right? There's Friday, there's Saturday. Where is the depth of the draft, Dane, to the point where maybe there's not a run on guys in the first round because you think you can still get a really good player in the second or third?
It really depends on the position. Because wide receiver is going to stretch. That's a position where second round, third round, sixth round, seventh round, there's going to be someone every step of the way that you feel comfortable adding to the offense saying this is a guy that's going to help us. Now, you can't say that same thing about offensive tackle, about linebacker. Like offensive tackle is a really strong group this year at the top. But then I do think there's a drop off, a pretty considerable drop off once you get to day two and day three. And there's some guys that, you know, can be quality pros in that mix. You know, Kingsley Suamatia from BYU, he's in there. Patrick Paul from Houston, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. So, you know, there's plenty of tackles that can be NFL starters, but the list really, it dwindles. And so if you don't get your guy in the first round, you probably have to draft him a little bit earlier than you want if you want that offensive tackle, because it is a position that will fall off. You know, running back, if you want a high-level one, if you want a Bijan Robinson, a Jahmyr Gibbs, that guy's not in this draft. But round three, round four, there's tremendous depth based off of the type of running back that you're looking for. Corners, kind of like wide receiver, where some guys are going to go in the first round, but it's also a position that will stretch. I love some of the day two corners this year. Guys like Mikey Sainristil still from Michigan, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. These guys are more nickels, a little bit undersized, but they're just good football players. You know, sometimes we get caught up too much in the arm length and this and that. Just give me the good football players, and you know, someone, a team's going to get some really good value with those guys in round two. So yeah, it's just, it really depends on the position in terms of depth and which position is going to stretch. And I mentioned receiver being a position that has really good depth this year. Even with that, I still think these receivers are going to go really fast. Three in the top 10, a couple more in the first round. And then round two is going to be a ton of these receivers. We might have 12, 13, 14 by the time the second round's over. Just because that's what the NFL has become. It's all about affecting the scoreboard with receivers. And these guys, there's a lot of talent at the position this year, and they're going to fly off the board.
Who are some of the day three dudes that you really like, you know, that when we're watching on Saturday or paying attention, that if a team got this guy, you'd be pretty excited about? And by the way, what are the philosophies for teams on day three? Because some teams later on day three are really just, it's like a lottery ticket, right? They just are kind of going for a guy that has traits but hasn't put it together, whereas other teams are still just trying kind of going for good football players.
Yeah, and I think the goal for every team, it's kind of like the unwritten rule of the draft. You want to come away from each draft with four starters. And so I do think there's something to be said about drafting traits and upside and potential, but also, you know, it depends on your appetite for risk. And some guys might go for the low ceiling type of player, but you know what? He's got enough traits with what he offers that, hey, he can potentially be a starter for us. So yeah, there's differing philosophies, no doubt. You know, like one guy I really like in the early day three is Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. Former wide receiver at Iowa, transfers to Purdue, move him to running back. And I mean, you can kind of tell that he's new to the position with some of the decision making at the line of scrimmage. But you want a guy that has agility, quickness, can make guys miss. And then what he does on passing downs, that's the key here. He's not going to be your featured back, but you add him to the committee. And he reminds me, okay, in basketball, that high energy six man who can swing games when he gets hot. And Tracy's kind of that weapon where, you know, he can rip off an explosive play or two throughout the course of a game, probably as a pass catcher out of the backfield. So Tyrone Tracy's that guy, fourth, fifth round, that if you're looking for another element to your backfield, he makes a lot of sense. At tight end, Tip Ryman from Illinois, 6'4", 270 plus pounds. The production's not going to jump out at you. You know, three touchdowns this year, 19 catches. I just, he wasn't allowed to really blossom as a weapon in that offense. This is not how they used him. But then you look at his testing. You look at, you know, what he did well on his tape, and you're like, okay, there's more in this guy's body than what we saw. He's a mature player. He's already married. He's just 22 years old. But there's upside there as well. So if you're looking for that guy that can be a wide tight end, a development guy, Tip Ryman from Illinois is in that mix. And then, you know, on the defense, Braden McGregor from Michigan, high energy pass rusher, just a guy that you wind up, let him go. More of a sub package guy, but that's why we're talking fourth, fifth, sixth round. But has kind of the makeup of what a lot of these teams are looking for at the position.
How do you think most teams have the quarterback stack, Dane? Top five guys?
It starts with Caleb, and then it's a lot of mixed opinions. Between Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, throw Penix and Nix in there. It's like the word consensus, it should never be used in an NFL draft discussion, because it's just even Caleb at number one, he is widely believed to be the top player this year. But still, even the word consensus shouldn't be used, because every team looks at these guys a little bit differently. And I think we have to remember, too, if you're drafting a quarterback top 10, that's an ownership decision. So it doesn't matter what one scout says or the other scout. It's going to come down to the general manager and the owner as they make a decision. Okay, who's the best guy for us? And that's why the Commanders at number two are tough to figure out when you have a brand new regime, first year under this new ownership with this draft, a first year general manager, a head coach who has been around for a while, but he brings a different perspective being a defensive guy. So the Commanders are really a wild card, and they're not going to let it be known who they're taking, especially this early in the process. So we're all kind of guessing at this point, and the buzz we hear about Jaden Daniels going to, that's what other teams think that they're going to do. And so Drake May, for a lot of teams, he's the number two guy. And then J.J. McCarthy has plenty of love around the league because of the tools and the intangibles. That's when you sit down with J.J. McCarthy, you walk away thinking, okay, this guy has it. He has something that I want to be able to work with. So, and then there's, you know, some teams are optimistic about Michael Penix. Other teams believe he's a third or fourth round pick. It's a really wide range of opinion on all these guys.
Check him out on social media at DP Brugler. As you can tell, he is all over it. He does this all year, 365 days a year. He's the man. Absolutely love our conversations. Love when we text back and forth. Dane even helps me out with my broadcasts during the season, let me know about some of the prospects and players before the games, and it is much, much appreciated. You have to get the Beast from The Athletic. You're doing it wrong if you haven't. Dane, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, Ross.
Tux Takes.
All right, Ross. The Jets, they're still trying to trade Zach Wilson, who GM Joe Douglas described as an asset and is not attending voluntary workouts.
Okay, I this is probably the juiciest thing that happened since Thursday's show, Jack. So I'm going to make this a meaty Monday presented by GoodRanchers.com, America's best meat delivered to your door. Use code Ross for 15% off a better way to buy meat at GoodRanchers.com. Nobody really wants Zach Wilson, right? I mean, number one, he's not really the ideal veteran backup number two, doesn't really have that makeup. He's not really a developmental number three anymore. And certainly nobody wants to pay him the $5.4 million guaranteed that he's due this year. So for the Jets, they're either going to have to eat a decent amount of that money, or this will be like a Brock Osweiler trade where it's actually the Jets giving up a draft pick for someone to take that contract off their books. The Jets think that they're going to get something in return for Zach Wilson. That's not happening, and I think they probably are realizing that now.
Well, Anderson is stepping down as the NFL VP of officiating, but he will remain at the league office.
He's going to be like in communications or something. I guess he couldn't be the head of officiating and then his son be an official, because then he's like his son's boss. So they can't allow that. So he's still involved. He just can't be the boss. So they're going to interview other guys. The only signings, by the way, Jack, over the weekend, a couple of O-linemen. The Packers signed offensive lineman Andre Dillard. The Browns signed offensive lineman Jermaine Ifedi. You know, I think it's fair to say both these guys were first round disappointments, right? They were both taken in the first round and didn't really become what their teams were hoping. I actually thought the Eagles might re-sign Dillard to have a guy as a guard tackle depth piece like a Jack Driscoll, because Dillard actually played pretty well when he's with the Eagles, and Stoutland, that's how he got that big contract from the Titans. I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. We're what, less than 3 weeks away from Mother's Day? Moms are the greatest thing of all time, any mom ever. Go to MyFrontPageStory.com. I'm trying to send you guys a signed autograph. I guarantee you get a signed autograph from me if you get someone a story, a mom, or it could be an anniversary or birthday or whatever. MyFrontPageStory.com. If it's not the best gift you've ever gotten them, I'd be surprised. BackOfficeSchedule.com, SteakhouseSports.com, HumanHeadNYC.com, Sporticulture, Pizza Boy Brewing.